The Senate will please come to order, and the clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Boquist, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, Ferrioli, George, George, Gerard, Gerard, Hass, Hass, Johnson, Johnson, Cruz, Cruz, Metzger, Metzger, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Nelson, Brzezinski, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Star, Star, Telfer, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Whitsett, Winters, Winters, President Courtney.
Form being present, we will post the colors, and Senator Nelson is going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Senator Joanne Verger will deliver today's invocation.
Regardless of the faith or denomination, there are certain principles that seem to guide people's lives. For some people, it is the love that they have for God that you see in their everyday life. For others, it is how they make decisions and how they treat people. But regardless of the group that you fall into, it seems that all of these principles are nurtured by prayer. And so because of that, let us pray. We thank you, God, for the opportunity to serve. We come before you today with great responsibilities and challenges. There's a long session ahead. Some are already tired, and others are ill. But they are here, God, working and feeling the responsibility for others' lives. Give them strength. We ask today for guidance, for patience, for wisdom, and tolerance each day that we are in this session. May our sincere prayers be heard, and in your name, amen.
Thank you, Senator Verger, for your prayer, and thank you, Senator Nelson, for leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance. We're now on to courtesies, my fellow senators. We're now on to remonstrances. Recognize Senator Brzezinski.
Mr. President, I was wondering if I can go back to courtesies.
Without objection, please feel free to do so. We're now on to courtesies.
Mr. President, I have the honor today to have sitting with me the Governor's Minority Youth Award, one of the winners. She was a nominee based on her essay, and she is one of the winners, and she has come through the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, OYCC, programs, and she is here today to help participate with the Training and Employment Consortium that will be her, that's the organization that she's worked with, but with OICC and their, I'm going to call it semi-annual meeting. And, Luque is 19 years age and she is a mother of a 4-year-old son. She has, learned a lot through the process. She has, been, striving to put back to the community what she has learned through the program. She is now currently working through a process of determining as to what her next ventures will be. She has strived to looking at a position in the registered nurse, but now she's thinking that maybe she wants to put more toward conservation because of the work and the experiences that she's had. So it's been very important in her life as to how OICC and the program that she worked through out of Ontario, Training and Employment Consortium, to be able to be here today and being a very productive individual and as I said, a mother that's caring for a child and wanting to make certain that she can, in fact, move forward. It should be noted that during her high school, she earned a valedictorian in May of 2008. And she has actually has continued to do other work through the OICC programs and is working as a participant in the jobs program through the Oregon Department of Human Services as a temporary assistant for needy families. So, Mr. President, thank you very much for extending courtesies to her.
Thank you. The first name, Senator, I'm sorry. The first name?
Sobeya. Sobeida.
Well, listen, thank you for coming here today. Congratulations on all that you've done and you're going to do. I'm sure whether it's conservation or nursing, you'll do very, very well. It's an honor and a privilege to have you here today. I'd like to extend the official courtesies of the Senate to you, okay? Hope you have a nice day here in your state capital. Thank you, Senator Brzezinski. Recognize Senator Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would like to request courtesies of the Senate to be extended to Mr. Tyler Webb, who joins me at my desk. Tyler is from John Day. He's 18 years old, attends Willamette University, majoring in international studies or economics. He plans to minor in Spanish. Also, someday his dream is to study in Argentina. He wants to go into business or law after graduating from Willamette. He currently works as a wildland firefighter during the summer, and he loves to race mountain bikes. And, Mr. President, his father is Judge Mark Webb of Grant County. But, interestingly, Tyler worked last summer on a BLM engine crew out of Dayville, and he was temporarily assigned to California to fight the Mammoth Lake fires. So, Mr. President, this is quite an accomplished young man, and we're very lucky to have him in our office, and we would like to have courtesies of the Senate extended to Mr. Tyler Webb.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Tyler, listen, I'd like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to you. I've always wanted to fight fires, but it didn't happen. So I'm in awe of the people who do, so congratulations to you. We should talk sometime about that. So good luck to you. Where was it you want to visit or be? What was that, Senator Farioli?
Argentina, Mr. President.
Oh, I missed
that.
I thought it was
romantic flair.
Yeah, well, I'm not real romantic. Okay. Tyler, thanks for coming here. I hope you enjoy your day here in the state capitol. I'd like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to you. Thank you. Recognize Senator Monroe, please.
Under remonstrances, Mr.
President.
Yeah,
we're not there. Are there any further courtesies, please? All right. We'll now go to the order of remonstrance. Yes, Senator Monroe, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. We all know that 200 years ago today, that would have been 1809, February the 12th, in a small cabin in Kentucky, a baby that was born that became the 16th president of the United States, perhaps the greatest president we've ever known, Abraham Lincoln. You all know that. What you don't know is that exactly 100 years later, on February the 12th, 1909, another baby was born, again in a small cabin, and that baby grew up to be a renowned college professor, botanist, historian, philosopher, marathon runner, mountain climber. He was my father, Warner Monroe. I remember when I was in my early 30s and I was running with my father, I looked over him and I said, "Dad, you realize when you're 100, I'll be 66? And he said, "Yeah, Rod, if you live that long." Well, Dad, on your 100th birthday, I'm still here.
Thank you, Senator Monroe. Recognize Senator Jackie Dingfelder, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, on your desk today, you will find a Valentine from the Oregon Hunger Task Force. Hopefully you receive that today. This Valentine's Day marks a great achievement. As you know, it's our state's 150th birthday. But for many Oregonians, there's little reason to celebrate. And too many of our neighbors are struggling just to pay for food, housing, and other basic necessities. No matter what part of the state we come from, each of us know people in our area who are simply trying to keep one day ahead of the bills and who have far more pressing concerns than joining us in wishing our state a happy birthday. But there is something that we all can do. Now is a time when human services are most needed. Now is a time for us to help Oregonians, many of whom never thought they would ever have to ask for assistance. I urge all of us to do everything we can to find solutions for funding our human service programs, because our neighbors are counting on us. Thank you.
Thank you. Further remonstrances? Messages from the House, messages, reports from the conference committees. Reports from standing committees. In accordance with SR 8.551, committee report summary number 12 was distributed to members today. This information will be recorded in the Journal of the Status Report and so ordered. Reports from special committees. Opposition motion. Recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the consideration of House Bill 2157 and SJR 15 be made a special order of business at the head of today's third reading calendar.
Senator Devlin has moved that the consideration of HB 2157 and SJR 15 be made a special order of business at the head of today's third reading calendar. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I believe that this action will make this an expeditious session in which we can do our work in a timely manner.
Discussion for the motion is now before us on special order of business. The question is on making HB 2157 SJR 15 special order of business at the head of today's third reading calendar. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion has carried. Action on executive appointments that require Senate confirmation. Introduction, first reading of Senate measures.
Senate Joint Memorial 6, urging Congress in the United States participation in Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. Senate Joint Memorial 7, urging United States Secretary of Interior to allow taking of cormorants in Oregon. Senate Joint Memorial 8, urging United States Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Homeland Security, and Secretary of State to ensure equitable international fishing privileges within an exclusive economic zone. Senate Resolution 2, declaring the development of hydrogen-based economies in Oregon is high priority. Senate Bill 520, relating to hepatitis C. Senate Bill 521, relating to practice of chiropractic. Senate Bill 522, relating to hunting decoys. Senate Bill 523, relating to hunting of game animals. Senate Bill 524, relating to fishing in Columbia River. Senate Bill 525, relating to smolts and appropriate money. Senate Bill 526, relating to legal expenses awarded against state agencies and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 527, relating to fishing. Senate Bill 528, relating to field burning, property money, and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 529, relating to the Department of Human Services, declaring emergency.
Transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 58 relating to discriminatory practices involving real property and court emergency. Senate Bill 59 relating to housing discrimination and court emergency. Senate Bill 109 relating to sellers of travel. Senate Bill 127 relating to financial responsibility requirements for motor vehicles. Senate Bill 172 relating to regulation of tax restrictions. Senate Bill 204 relating to construction contractor bonding. Senate Bill 206 relating to persons regulated by Construction Contractors Board. Senate Bill 244 relating to Oregon State Bar and court emergency.
These are passed to the calendar. We'll now proceed to special order of business. My fellow senators, the Senate has shown in the past its ability to debate an issue with great vigor and very forcefully, but also in a very civil and a respectful manner. The clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 2157 relating to connection to federal tax law and prescribing an effective date.
Recognize Senator Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, point of order.
Yes, please. State your point.
Mr. President, I believe the board should indicate that this is a bill that requires a three-fifths majority.
Could you let me confer with the Secretary of the Senate? Might I, please? My fellow senators, we will stand at ease as we ask for legislative counsel to come to us to give us an interpretation of the motion which is now before us. With vigor and forcefully, civilly and respectfully. My fellow senators, I'd like to bring us back to order, please. Senator Farioli, I'd like to bring us back to order, and since you made the motion, I have counseled with counsel, legislative counsel, and they have informed me that at this moment, this bill takes a simple majority as federal law has not changed, and that is my ruling on your motion. Therefore, I believe the measure as set out on the board is correct in terms of that, speaking specifically to your motion, Senator Farioli.
Speak to the motion, Mr. President?
Please do.
Thank you. Mr. President, the eyes of the world have been focused on Washington, D.C.
Let me just do one thing here. So you're challenging the rule of the chair?
I am.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. And as you all know, the most important piece of legislation that's galvanized attention on Washington, D.C. is the stimulus package. And I think you all saw the headlines in the last couple of days. There is a compromise on the stimulus package. The Senate and the House have agreed. Whether or not the President actually signs the law that will come from that is immaterial. If he doesn't sign it, it still becomes law. The fact of the matter is, Mr. President, to your ruling specifically, we have a statement from the revenue officer, the chief revenue officer of the state of Oregon, of the legislature, our revenue officer, that says this bill raises $96 million. And he tells us exactly and specifically how that revenue is to be raised. And that memorandum, colleagues, is on your desks. This is a revenue-raising measure. Unquestionably, it needs to be presented to this body with a revenue statement showing that that's the case, and it needs a three-fifths majority vote. Mr. President, notwithstanding the opinion of our learned legal counsel, we have an opinion just as learned to the contrary. Mr. President.
Thank you. I've just been informed the following. I've already, the ruling of the chair was questioned. There is no discussion on the ruling of the chair. We just go to vote. But in deference to the good minority leader, the leader of the Republicans, I allowed you to make an extensive statement, so I'm glad you did. So I have made a ruling that the measure before us requires a simple majority, and that the measure as described in the board is accurately described. The good Senator Ferriola has challenged that ruling. So now we will go to a vote of this. Would you want it by voice vote, or should we make a roll call? Okay. I would ask, therefore, that the ruling of the chair has been challenged. All those in favor of the ruling of the chair, and I hope I've described it accurately, you will please say no. All those in favor... That's not good at all. That's right. Ignore the ruling of the chair on the last point. All those in favor of the ruling of the chair, please say aye, and those opposed, you will say no. Thank you. The chair got confused on rulings. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
No.
Burdick. Burdick. Carter.
Yes.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
Yes.
George.
No.
Gerard.
No.
Hass.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
No.
Metzger.
Aye.
Bonas Anderson. Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
No.
Nelson.
No.
Brzezinski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr. Starr.
Senator Starr?
No.
Okay.
Telfer.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker.
Aye.
Whitsett. Winters.
No.
Atkinson.
No.
President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no. Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters. 18 ayes.
The ruling of the chair, having received the majority, stands. Would the clerk please read the bill? Excuse me? We've already read it. Senator Jenny Burdick, would you please stand to carry the measure?
I'd be pleased, Mr. President. Thank you. House Bill 2157A restores Oregon's federal tax connection policy that has been in place between 1969 and 1997 and for 2003 and 2005. This policy consists of a biennial reconnect bill in which the legislature considers each federal law change. House Bill 2157A moves Oregon away from the rolling reconnect provision enacted in 1997 and restored in 2005. The rolling reconnect automatically connects Oregon to changes in the federal definition of taxable income unless the legislature acts to disconnect. Now, what this means is that for purposes of defining taxable income, in 1997, this legislature decided for those purposes, instead of just coming back every 2 years to adopt, to connect to those changes in the definition of taxable income, that we would have a rolling reconnect. In other words, people who are relying on federal tax law would know on a literally day-by-day basis that those same definitions of taxable income at the federal level also applied on the state. Now, the federal reconnect it has been a good policy and a bad policy. The good things about it is it provides consistency. It provides taxpayers with predictability when they're taxing, when they're filing their tax forms. The one time that the rolling reconnect simply does not work, it absolutely does not work, and that is during an economic downturn such as what we are experiencing now. And the reason it does not work is for one simple reason. The federal government can incur a deficit, and the states cannot. We cannot do deficit spending like the government does. So during an economic downturn, such as we had in 2002, and such as we have now, the federal government quite naturally adopts stimulus policies to increase spending, to increase tax breaks, and funds those with deficit spending. We do not have that option in Oregon. So by disconnecting from the rolling disconnect, that we have in House Bill 2157, what we have done is we have taken the federal tax breaks and we have left it open here in Oregon whether we are also going to adopt those tax breaks here. This does not mean that we are rejecting the tax breaks that appear in the federal stimulus package. And it certainly does not mean that we have any impact on the federal benefits. The businesses that are affected by this disconnection from the rolling reconnect will receive their full federal benefit under the federal tax stimulus program. And so will others who are affected by that stimulus package. They get their full federal benefits. Here in Oregon, these benefits will be out there as revenue measures that will be on the same table as funding for education, funding for social services, other business incentives that we have in Oregon, such as the business energy tax credit. And they will be competing on a level playing field for funding in Oregon. We will have a reconnect bill in this legislature that will be considered in the whole scheme of things as we work our way through the most difficult budget season that I have experienced in my 12 years in the legislature. It is simply unfair. It would be unfair to take a select group of people who happen to be benefiting from these federal tax breaks. It would simply be unfair to move them at the head of the line in advance of any budget decisions when we are closing schools early, we are throwing seniors out of assisted living, we are jeopardizing our public safety system. It would simply be unfair in that climate to take people who are already getting tax relief at the federal level and move them to the head of the line here in Oregon. There are a number of provisions, as you've heard in the past couple of days, in both the recently in the conference report that will be considered in the Congress. These provisions that I'm talking about today would reduce the 2009 and 2011 general fund revenue between 80 and 100 million. Now, when we've had circumstances like this in the past, as I said before, Oregon has traditionally disconnected from the federal code because of this very same reason. Sometimes we simply, as a state, cannot afford to fund all of the stimulus provisions that the federal government provides because we do not have the ability to run up debt. So restoring Oregon's policy of connecting to the federal tax code at a point in time, and 2157 connects us to the federal tax code effective December 31st, 2008. So we are fully connected as of that date certain. We have declined to continue a rolling reconnect. By connecting at that point in time means that the legislature will review each change that we will review from the federal stimulus package and other federal tax changes and make the decision here whether it is in the best interest of the state to connect. In the case of revenue losses through the federal connection, this decision will be based on comparing those losses with the cost of reducing budgets or the potential gains for the economy of initiatives that we take here in the state to improve our particular business climate based on our own needs. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Further discussion? Recognize Senator Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will the carrier yield to a question?
Will the carrier yield?
She will.
She will.
Mr. President, I'd like to know how much revenue this measure creates for Oregon.
This has no revenue impact in Oregon. It neither creates nor takes away revenue.
Question to the carrier, Mr. President.
Would the carrier yield?
She will.
She will.
The memorandum that you have on your desk, Senator, from the revenue agent says this creates $96 million in revenue. Can you reconcile those two facts?
The actual facts of the matter are that this does not create that much revenue. This puts us in a position of not being required to provide between $80 and $100 million in revenue if we were automatically connected to the federal tax stimulus.
Further question, Mr. President?
Would the carrier yield?
She will.
She will.
What is the effect of this measure on bonus depreciation? How much revenue is going to be created by the disconnect for bonus depreciation? Very specific question, Mr. President.
No revenue will be either taken away or created at the or produced at the state level for bonus depreciation. That issue remains on the table. The bonus depreciation benefit still exists at the federal level, and it remains on the table, an open question at the state level.
Mr. President, special expensing rules are affected by this measure.
Senator, are you now speaking?
I'm asking a question, Mr. President.
Okay.
Further question to the
yes,
carrier?
Yes, please. Would the carrier yield?
She will.
Yes, she will, please.
It appears that we're going to be taxing unemployment compensation, Mr. President. I'd like to know how much revenue that will produce.
The unemployment benefits are taxed now. In the federal stimulus package, there is a deduction for a certain portion of unemployment benefits, and so it remains for us to decide whether we also want to give a tax deduction for those benefits. But this measure does not automatically commit us to that, but it leaves open our ability to make that decision as we consider our reconnect bill.
Question to the carrier, Mr. President.
Would the carrier yield?
She will.
She will.
Mr. President, if the President Obama had signed the stimulus deal in Washington, what would the revenue effect of this measure be?
If this were being adopted after the stimulus package that we see now is in effect, then it would have the effect of raising revenue by $80 to $100 million. However, it would not. This would be in the nature of failure to grant a tax break, and it would not be an additional tax.
Mr. President, to the bill.
Oh, to the bill, please. Thank you.
Thank you. We finally get to the answer. $80 to $100 million tax increase. Mr. President, every Oregon family has a family history, which is a real history, and a family mythology. And in my family, Mr. President, I'd like to share some of that mythology. Bootlegger. My grandfather had come to this country in 1908, settled in New York. With the advent of Prohibition, he moved his family to Connecticut, New Britain, Connecticut. And in Connecticut, he became a dairy farmer. I don't know the name of the dairy farm. I like to think of it as the Sunshine Dairy in Connecticut. Two large barns, a fleet of 20 milk trucks, and two very contented cows. We're told that the alcohol came in from Canada. good Canadian whiskey, and the alcohol came from Great Britain, probably gin, and good Scots whiskey. And that those trucks were filled with that product.
Wait a minute,
and
Senator, wait a minute. What's the matter? What was the, excuse me. I'm sorry, Senator, your time right, I didn't, excuse me, Senator, please proceed.
And that product was lovingly loaded into those 20 trucks and moved into New York State and New Jersey. Bootlegger, Mr. President. But the way this measure comes to the floor and the way it's characterized today would make my bootlegger grandfather blush. This is a tax measure. It's going to raise $96 million in revenue. Ain't no question about it. Needs a three-fifths majority. We have an opinion from the Legislative Revenue Office. It's very specific. This measure will tax unemployment benefits. Oh, yes, it will. $15 million in 09-11. $15 million of taxes on unemployed benefits. Incredible. The special expensing rules will be suspended. That the 08 stimulus law temporarily increases those amounts. That'll produce $3 million in revenue, direct hit on Oregon businesses. Direct hit. Boom. Nice shooting. Bonus depreciation, and this is something that really, really, really hurts. All over Oregon, small business people have had to make an agonizing decision about whether or not to make investments in their companies that took money right out of the bottom line. Maybe they even spent their retirement income to remain competitive, to buy the equipment, to buy the materials, to invest in the increase in capacity so they could remain competitive. And they agonized over those decisions, and family members were consulted, and bankers were talked to, and finally, the decision probably came down to a heart-to-heart discussion with their CPA. And what made it sensible to stay and fight in Oregon for the survival of the business was the accelerated depreciation that would allow some of that money to come back into the business. Well, this suspends that opportunity retroactively. So we're sending a message to those businesses who sucked it up and took the leap of faith and put their $150,000 in and got their banker to agree to a $200,000 loan at not very favorable interest rates to capitalize those improvements. And guess what? The depreciation reward for that, the incentive for that, built into every other state in the union, disappears in Oregon. How much does that cost us? $78 million. Now, folks, you just approved $177 million in spending in order to create 3,000 jobs. And now you're going to take away about $100 million in tax credits for Oregonians and zero out half the jobs you just created. This is insensible. On your desks, you have a communication from the people whose jobs you just tried so hard to incent. Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Restaurant Association, Oregon Metals Industry Council, NFIB of Oregon, Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers, Oregon Seed Council, Oregon Small Business Coalition, Oregon Farm Bureau, Oregon Home Builders Association, Northwest Food Processors Association, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, Oregon Plumbing and Heating and Cooling Contractors have all said, please don't do this. Now, Mr. President, we can argue till we're purple about whether this is a revenue-increasing measure. LRO says it is. When President Obama signs the stimulus package, there's no argument left. Republicans did everything we could to delay this bill for a couple more days, so there would be no ambiguity about whether this is a tax vote or not. Well, you know what? It quacks like a duck. It's a tax increase. And trust me, as soon as Senator Obama or President Obama signs the bill, we are going to go back through LRO and get that revenue statement that needed to be attached to this measure, demonstrating that it's a tax increase, and we will publish it far and wide. You're voting today on a tax increase. Let's not mince words or obfuscate or bootleg a tax increase. Because that's what we're doing. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Winters yielded her time. Recognize Senator Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the measure.
To the measure.
Colleagues, I've been serving in this Legislative Assembly since 1997 and have been honored to do so. This session, my level of frustration with the way this process is operating and the way I always thought it should operate and the differences between the two has grown exponentially as the weeks have passed. I haven't been sleeping well at night just because I'm so concerned about what we're doing. And I'm trying to understand why we're doing it, why this rush to judgment on so many things. You know, we rushed to pass a stimulus package that will create a few temporary jobs for a short period of time. And the ultimate beneficiary of that stimulus package is state government, because that's where the projects are. A bill that has not come to this floor yet, came out of Ways and Means Committee, was a tax on recording fees to spend on other measures, other things. It's called a fee. It's a tax. But somehow we seem to be rushing to do that. And by the way, that is an unfunded mandate on counties. But that doesn't seem to really bother us. A committee in this body 2 days ago passed a bill to take out the Klamath River dams with really no science behind it, no real assessment of the liability that the state of Oregon is going to incur. And in fact, without having all of the data that should have been available to the committee when they made the decision. And now we are rushing to do this disconnect, so it doesn't appear we are raising taxes. And I suppose on the back end, then we can go back and restore a couple. We can reconnect on a couple things and proclaim how wonderful we are because we have cut taxes for some people. But, you know, it's a matter of the uncertainty in the public right now is significant and huge on this issue. There are, in the federal stimulus package, there are 50 tax cuts. 50. Where's our analysis of what's in the federal stimulus package relative to Oregon? Where is the analysis? We aren't getting analysis on anything we're doing here. We're just doing it because it looks good or it feels good. Colleagues, this is supposed to be a deliberative process. It's supposed to be an inclusive process. And at this point in time, a little over a month into the session, it has been neither. You know, the people of Oregon elected us to come up and here to represent them. They also elected 60 members in the other chamber to come up and represent them. I think they would be disturbed significantly if they knew how few people are actually making these decisions and how exclusive this process has been to date. This is not the way the legislature is supposed to work. I know that this is greased, it's going to pass. And be that as it may, I'm going to vote no because not only because of the merits of the bill, but because of the way we are going about doing the business of the people of Oregon. Colleagues, I've got several letters on my desk here. Those opposing this measure come from the private sector of the state of Oregon. Those supporting the measure come from government. The message we are sending to the people of Oregon so far this session is that we consider government to be more important than the people. And I don't think that's the message we should be sending. This should be a vote on principle, Mr. President, and I urge a no vote. And, Mr. President, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
What is your potential? What is your conflict, please, potential?
I'm one of the small businesses that could be negatively impacted by this measure.
Well, your potential conflict of interest is noted. Thank you, Senator Cruz. Recognize Senator Nelson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I stand in opposition to this bill for the following reasons. I supported the first bill that came through, and this is one of several bills that we're going to hear on how to solve the problem that Oregon faces. I supported the first bill because we put money into the system. I oppose this bill because we're taking money out of it. I don't think we're addressing the fundamental question that we have before us as a legislative body, and that is the taxpayer will not accept increased taxes to support a growing demand for public services. That's our fundamental problem. How do we fund public services when the taxpayer is not willing to pay more in taxes? We can't even pass a cigarette tax in this state. And so I'm asking, or I'm sending out a message to you folks, do we want to follow the California model, which has every tax known to humankind and $40 billion of deficit, or do we want to follow the Alaska model that has no income tax, no sales tax? They paid their eligible residents $3,500 per person this year. And they did it because they rely upon royalty income from the use of a natural resource. So I'm saying what this body has to do is address two things. Invest in infrastructure and develop a stream of revenue based upon royalty income from using natural resources. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I hadn't really wanted to stand up and speak against this bill, Mr. President and colleagues, except that I had a conversation yesterday that I want to relay on the floor. In fact, the farmer that I talked to almost demanded that I relay his story to you all, as it impacts a real-life family. This farmer comes from a long history of family farming. He wanted to continue in that family farming business. In order to do that, he needed to buy out his siblings, as it relates to the farm that he currently farms. So he had to figure out how to do that. He had to come up with $1.5 million to buy out his siblings and keep the family farm in the family and continue to in productive farming. As he looked at that possibility and the process by which they could try to make the whole thing work, make all the numbers jive so that we can continue to have this farm in the family and in operation. The only way that they could make this pencil, Mr. President, is with this bonus depreciation. Colleagues, and we're going to take that away from him if you pass this bill. Think about not just the farmer in Western Washington County, but think about the farmers and the farm families across the state of Oregon that are going to be negatively impacted by this bill. I urge a no vote, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Rod Monroe, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Let's be really clear, really clear. This measure will not raise taxes one penny. It may have the effect of canceling some tax cuts, but it won't raise taxes one penny. Keeps Oregon tax law exactly where it is now. Now, if we go ahead and defeat this measure and connect automatically to all of the federal changes, the impact of that will be that in the next biennium, we'll be cutting schools, human services, by another $80 million. If you want to do that, go ahead and vote against it.
Thank you, Senator. Recognize Senator Frank Morris, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, this is not the first really tough bill that we're going to be faced with this session. There will be many. I'm concerned about the message that we're sending today if we approve this measure. The federal stimulus package, approximately a third of the federal stimulus package, is focused on those things that will be an incentive to create jobs. And what are we saying today is that we're disconnecting from those incentives to create jobs. Our children, our sons, our daughters, our wives, our husbands, our spouses, our aunts and our uncles, our nieces and our nephews, our friends across this state are employed. And who employs these people? Small business, large business, medium-sized business. It's the employment side of our economy that drives the services for state government that we value so highly. And I share the dilemma in deciding on this measure today in the revenue-limited environment that we have. But it's the message that is going out to those businesses that employ that disturbs me the most. And that is, and Mr. President, colleagues, I just brought to the Capitol building this morning my Chamber of Commerce directory. And I was going through these. A Stitch in Time, Absolute General Contracting, Agritech of Oregon, AK Carpet and more, Albany Lock and Key. There are hundreds of these businesses, hundreds of businesses, not just in my district, but in your districts. And they're struggling. And why would the federal government pass a stimulus package if we're going to cut the thread and deny that same privilege to our businesses that are so important to generate the revenue upon which we depend for public services? Colleagues, this is a tough decision. I honestly wrestled with this issue, and I was landing on one side and saying, you know, this, we really should disconnect. But on the other side of the issue, if we connect or disconnect from the heartbeat of what makes this economy go, we have really missed the point. And it disturbs me. There's a, and I call it a culture that's emerging within this assembly that says business is not important. And that's what we're saying with this measure today if we were to adopt it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Frank Marsh. Recognize Senator Floyd Pazansky, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. President, I want to talk about the process that we have here today and what this bill actually does for us, House Bill 2157. What it actually does is allow us as a state to actually exercise what the U.S. Constitution gives us through the 10th Amendment. That's states' rights. It allows us to have the independent choice to look at each and every one of these components individually to determine how we are, in fact, going to respond and react. It's important, Mr. President, to realize that I've heard many of our colleagues talk about how the state should run as a business. Well, we, the legislature, are, in fact, the board of directors for the state of Oregon. And what else and where else would that policy be best served except here in this body to take a chance and look at each one of those opportunities that we have to see what fits best for our state and not to rely upon the federal government to give us some type of mandate that says one size fits all, this is how you have to do it, instead of looking at what we believe is best for our state. There is absolutely nothing in House Bill 2157 that will keep us from reconnecting to any or all of those. But what we know at this point is we need to step back, take a breath, and see. I've had one of our colleagues today basically say that's what they want. They want to have a wait and see. They want to be more deliberative. That is why we should all be supporting House Bill 2157, because it does allow us the independence of a state as the board of directors for this state to make these determinations in a more deliberate manner instead of having something imposed upon us to the point of where we then have to say, boy, we missed an opportunity. There is nothing throughout this whole process while we go through this session to reconnect to each and every one of those if we decide to do so. So, Mr. President, I'm here standing today and asking all of my colleagues to think about what this vote really does. It gives us, the Oregon legislature, the opportunity to look at each and every individual proposal that has come from the federal government to determine if it's best for us as a state, for our citizens, for our businesses, and how we can best serve all of the policy decisions that need to be made during this session. So, Mr. President, I stand to support House Bill 2157 because I understand it, that it will, in fact, give us as individual legislators the time to be deliberative in our process and making decisions that aren't rushed. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Zanski, recognize Senator Chris Telfer, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. The Oregon Society of CPAs, Certified Public Accountants, has always recommended full rolling reconnect for consistency and fairness in reporting. So, as a CPA, I would generally support this reconnect bill. But today's headline in the Oregonian of "It's a deal on stimulus" makes me change my mind. As such, House Bill 2157 does not connect to the right federal tax rules. You all may think that House Bill 2157, in light of these pending tax changes, is the full CPA Full Employment Act. I want to say that adopting House Bill 2157 today creates a nightmare for taxpayers and tax preparers throughout the state. First, Oregonians will have two different tax rules and thus two different tax returns to file, which does not lead to a state goal of tax compliance. Second, taxpayers will spend more time and pay more for preparing their taxes because of the two separate sets of law. Third, how will Oregonians plan when they can only guess at whether and when the legislature will reconnect in the future? And lastly, the legislature has always asked our tax professionals, the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants, to prepare an analysis of changes in federal tax laws for review and consideration before taking action on the issue of reconnecting to federal tax code. No such report on the pending tax changes due to the stimulus package has been prepared and presented. In fact, this body has moved so fast that the 70-page analysis that was done regarding the 2008 tax changes hasn't even been presented to the legislature yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Telfer. Recognize Senator Mark Haas, please.
Mr. President, this debate may seem familiar to a lot of us. In 2005, the federal government passed a tax cut for manufacturers known as QPI, which stood for Qualified Production Activities Income. It was loosely worded, it was vague, and it was more ideological than practical. So the state of Oregon said, no thank you. And in bipartisan fashion, the legislature voted to disconnect from this tax break. Many of you here today in this room voted for that. The resulting savings of about $40 million a year was instead used to bolster the Oregon Research and Development Tax Credit. We broadened the definition and raised the cap. This is a real incentive with strictly defined language and is given to companies in Oregon only if they increase the number of R&D jobs in Oregon. The result was hundreds of new R&D jobs, jobs that routinely pay six-figure incomes. Intel, Oregon's largest tech company, has since added more than 500 new R&D jobs in its Rondler Acres Research Center in Hillsboro, a center that has now become the heart and soul of Intel. You want to talk about stimulus and tax incentives? Then let's talk about Intel. On Tuesday, it announced it would invest $1.5 billion in Oregon, much of that into research and development. And this is the difference between having a state strategy versus just saying me too to the federal government passed by a Congress that can spend in a deficit and passed by a Congress that is not responsible for keeping Oregon's schools and universities open. And by the way, that federal tax cut that we disconnected from in 2005, there's no evidence that it grew the economy or really created any new jobs, unless you count lawyers, because it has become a magnet of IRS litigation over which corporate activities were eligible for those deductions. And so that's why I think we should pass this bill. It allows Oregon to stand up for herself and to look for better targeted, more effective economic development strategies. We're not saying in this bill that business is not important. I think what we're saying is business is too important just to go along for the ride and say, me too.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Brian Boquist, please.
To the bill, Mr. President.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. One of the strengths of a democracy is actually having the debate on the floor and respectfully disagreeing with each other. I testified against this bill in committee, so I won't repeat those arguments. I'll just point that out. We're here today to ensure that our citizens reap no benefit from President Obama's economic stimulus package under Oregon law next Monday or Tuesday. That's a fact. Now, we can say it's a tax increase or we can say the other, but they're just not going to reap that benefit. We'll reserve that judgment for later. The carrier made mention, and I try to quote, and you can check the record if you want here, that we cannot afford to have a selected group of individuals benefit from President Obama's stimulus package. I focused in committee on the unemployed individuals, and I want to take a minute for future discussion. It's relevant to this bill, so please, Mr. President, don't gavel me down. For future discussions in this bill, who the unemployed are. So after February 20th, because this is a preconceived outcome here, we know who we're talking about. On your desk, and I checked with the secretary to make sure this is okay, on your desk, I put out today a paper that says true Oregon unemployment rates. I want to brief you very brief on this document so you understand what it says and how it impacts your district in Coos Bay and in Eugene and mid-Multnomah County and out in Hillsborough and Beaverton. The lower left side of that document has a series of references. These are all United States government or state of Oregon references that go down through there. Happy to provide them to you. If you look across the top, and this is important, colleagues, when we talk about unemployment rates, we always hear the official rate. The official rate is what's called a U3 rate. And that's important to understand because government collects U1 through U6, and we used to collect what's called a U7 rate. The second thing is we call those people unemployed, everybody, the unemployment base, the civilian labor force. The civilian labor force is everybody 16 years and older. So your high school students in your district down in Medford are included in this category. If you look at the official rate, you see the rates for the various counties. Oregon's around 9%. First column going across, you see Clackamas County at the top is 7.6%. And then you see actual claims in the next one, and then you come up with a raw rate, which really people who are unemployed. And in many cases, you'll see, like at the bottom, Yanhill County's official rate's 9.2%, but their actual raw unemployment rate with people in benefits is 12.8%. If you add the rest of those categories, which are disadvantaged and other people, you look to the far right column where in Yamhill County the effective rate is 18.3% unemployment. Up there in Clackamas County, it's 13.1% unemployment. So when we talk about human beings, like the single mother who's unemployed in my district in Sheridan, we talk about the family father of four who's laid off from the sawmill and is collecting unemployment, that's who we're talking about. Now, I will guarantee you that when the package is passed next week, that the board of directors of the state of Oregon, and that includes all of us, even those that are going to vote against this, even those that are against the economic stimulus package at the federal level, us, the board of directors, are going to spend every dime of state government money handed to us by the feds. Every dime will be spent and put into the budget. There'll be no discussion. We're going to take that federal money and we're going to spend it. That me money, we're going to spend. We're not going to deliberately say, nope, take this money back to Washington, D.C. you gave to the state because we don't want it. We're deliberately going to take it without discussion and put it into our budgets. Now, it seems to me, and again, I know this is a preconceived outcome, that this body is more than willing, as I said, to take free state money from President Obama's stimulus package, but we also want to take more money from Oregon's unemployed individuals. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Jason Atkinson, please.
To the bill.
To the bill, please.
That's a fine debate today, Mr. President.
If I were to surmise this bill, though, in one word, I would call this bill appalling. When I was about 19 years old, my mother bought me a suit from Pinstripe Charcoal. It was from Fred Meyer, or not from Fred Meyer, from Iron Frank. And it was a 42 long with a 30-inch waist. And I put that on, and I went to Washington, D.C., and I was a congressional intern. And I wore that almost every day until I saved up enough money to buy another sport coat. So I had two. And I saved up all my money one weekend, and I bought a bus ticket. And I went for this kid from Oregon, never been to the East Coast. I took off, and I went to New York City. And this big old Trailways bus dropped me off right at Rockefeller Square. And it dropped me off right in front of that statue of Mr. Atlas holding up the globe. And as I walked off the bus, there was a new friend just waiting for a kid to come off the bus from Oregon. He had this little table set up, and he had these cups, like dishes, and he'd move them around. And then he'd say, "Hey, kid, put a buck here. Here's $100. If you can tell me which one of these $100 is in, you can have it." I was too tight to go with a dollar, but I sat back and I watched this guy. And if I look at this bill today, it's just like it was when I was about 19 years old in New York City for the first time, a big shell game. Because we all know, if we just act honestly here, if this wasn't a special order of business today, and this vote were taken on Monday, this would be a tax increase. Shell game. We all know that this is a tax raise when you're going to start to tax unemployment. Someone who's getting unemployment is now going to be paying taxes on that. We know that we are now taxing under this bill, House Bill 2157, we're going to be changing the depreciation schedules. It's a shell game. You can see your stimulus. You can have it if you can see where Oregon State government is going to stop the shell. But no one can guess where this is going to stop. We've heard, quote, that this is unfair. And we've heard, quote, that we're putting somebody to the head of the line. Mr. President, my district's not at the head of any line. I have this bellwether community. I talk about it all the time. I've done it for 10 years. It's called the City of Rogue River. Little teeny, there's a lot of towns just like it all across Oregon, but this is my bellwether. If it doesn't work in Rogue River, I'm not voting for it. The last stimulus bill that we had didn't even give a rain gutter to Rogue River. But if you recall, I spoke about the principal who painted the school on his own dime. And the bake sales that went on, and the community that's trying to keep together. If it doesn't play in Rogue River, I ain't voting for it. This bill doesn't play in Rogue River. Let me read you some things that I've got in the last couple days from real people. Please vote no on this bill. Lyndon Gary Gross, Jacksonville, my former district minus redistricting, from Claire Niedermeyer. This bill is not good for small business and will not be good for Oregon. White City, Stan Alexander says vote no. From Medford, Dennis Johnson says, at a time when Oregon families need all the help they can receive to prevent these families the benefits of the federal stimulus bill is pathetic. John Gilson from Ashland, former hometown, no longer my district. Disconnecting Oregon from the federal tax code, denying Oregon, Oregonians and Oregon companies from the benefits of the federal stimulus package is wrong, resulting in nearly $100 million increase to Oregonians and Oregon businesses. This is a tax raise. Now, I agree intellectually with my good friend, the Honorable Senator from Lane County. He made a fantastic point about the 10th Amendment, which is why we should all vote no. We should all vote no because this is a bad bill and our people need to see the tax relief on a Thursday, not a tax increase on a Monday. We need to have that relief now. It is a states' rights bill. And my good senator friend from Beaverton made a great point,
Senator,
about
your time. Oh, your senator. Thank you. Senator Gerard yields. Please proceed, Senator. Please.
Thank you. My good friend and colleague from Senator from Beaverton made a great point about the Bush tax cuts that Oregon fought so often to disconnect from. The bottom line is this. What we're telling business here today is that you don't matter. Your depreciation, your investment doesn't matter. The stimulus bill that we passed a few weeks ago, that matters. Even though you can't participate, that's what matters. If you want to buy a new copier, a new car, a new fence, if you want to depreciate a new piece of equipment, that doesn't count. If you want to do that and grow your business, why don't you go, what we're saying, why don't you go to one of the other 49 states in America that are taking advantage of this rather than disconnecting like the state of Oregon's going to do. Oregon government wants your money, is what a yes vote on this does do. I couldn't help but to think about being just a kid and watching a shell game. Mr. President, I didn't play that game, and I don't think we should do that either.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Walker.
I have a question of the carrier, Mr. President, if I might.
Would the carrier yield?
Thank you, Senator. This isn't a simple bill, and yet it is a simple bill. So my question is, we are disconnecting from the federal tax code so that we can tax our citizens on some of these things that the federal government doesn't want us to tax on, and that gives us the flexibility. But let me ask you this about unemployment. The federal stimulus package has $2,400. The first $2,400 in unemployment is to be not taxed. If we disconnect, if we pass this bill, does that impact that stimulus package for unemployed individuals?
Well, thank you for the question. If we disconnect from the federal code, that means that the state of Oregon will decide how we will treat unemployment benefits rather than having an automatic tax exclusion for the first $2,400. And what that means is that when we introduce the Reconnect bill, which we are going to introduce, if unemployment benefits are in there, we will have a choice to exclude none of them, the $2,400, all of them. We will be deciding at our state level how much of an exclusion, how much of a tax break to give unemployment benefits, and we will have that choice.
Follow-up, Mr. President.
Would the carrier yield to another question?
She will.
She will.
Thank you, Senator, because that's the key. I tell you, I've got that
Senator,
funny...
Senator, do you have a question?
I do, and I have this funny feeling in my tummy, and I'm trying to get it out, Mr. President. The question that I asked was about unemployment, and your response to me is that if we reconnect on our own, because we can do that, we can exempt more than the $2,400 that the federal government is wanting to exempt in the stimulus bill. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. Mr. President, I now want to speak
Senator,
to the bill.
Oh, thank you. To the bill. Thank you, Senator.
My tummy is feeling better. This has been very difficult, Mr. President, and I've listened to the arguments and I understand them. It's a little bit difficult because tax policy is so strange to understand for most Oregonians, including myself. What I was concerned about most particularly was the unemployment benefits. I have had conversations with the chairs of the Revenue Committee, and I am certain, I am absolutely certain, and if they don't, I will, there will be a bill to allow us to exempt unemployment, a certain amount of unemployment from taxation. I would be prepared to vote for more than a $2,400 exemption because Oregonians are suffering and there are so many who are unemployed. So my tummy feels better knowing that we are going to address this issue, and by passing this bill, we now have the flexibility to exempt more. We also have the ability to exempt less, but I'm not going to stand for less. But we have the ability to exempt more of unemployment compensation from taxation. And so on that basis, Mr. President, I will now support this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Larry George, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. This is an inherently personal bill for me. And the reason why is because the business I own was built almost 100% using the accelerated depreciation schedule allowed in Section 179. I have heard the discussion about over the last two sessions about protecting what it seems to me big corporations. I'm not saying that big corporations in this state are not an important part of our tax policy, I mean, of our business community. I have seen efforts to spend more money on questionable projects and the idea of creating jobs. And it appears to me that this is about protecting big corporations and protecting big government to the detriment of those who are unemployed and those who own small businesses. My business would not be where it is today if it was not for Section 179. I will tell you that. All the employees that I go that are like family now, that work for my family, my brother and I, they work for us, we rely on them. And the fact is that they wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for accelerated depreciation. And for those of you who don't understand the impact of accelerated depreciation, when you are a small business trying to compete with large corporations, you have no capital. In our business, we compete against some of the biggest names. You guys would know them. And we've been beating them because we've been able to invest in capital projects and immediately expense those that year. This is an inherently personal bill to me. I cannot believe that when we talk about being the stewards or the board of directors for this state, that somehow we're able to protect the big corporations in this state and big government in this state, but small business continues to be kicked aside. I mean, seriously, at some point you have to ask yourself, who is the backbone of this state? And I'll tell you who the backbone of the state is. It's the people that the senator from Corvallis read in his Chamber of Commerce. I'm sorry, it's not taking moss off of a state forest building in a bonding bill. That's not the backbone of this state. I appreciate out-of-state state corporations that come in here and put plants in Hillsboro, but for the rest of us who are trying to operate small business in this state, think tools like accelerated depreciation is hugely important. My S corporation pays 9% state taxes, while those big corporations pay a little over 6. Why? Because they pay corporate taxes, and my taxes on my corporation go to my personal income sheet, and I pay more taxes than them. They have out-of-state capital. They have access to the capital markets. And yet the one program that was meant to help us who are small businesses, who are trying to create manufacturing jobs right here, what do? That's the first thing we kick out the door. We have corporate subsidy programs scattered through our other funds budget. But the one program that the majority party in Washington, D.C. kicks down to us, which is an increase in the accelerated depreciation, the Section 129, which will stimulate small, medium-sized manufacturing businesses. That's the first thing we kick out of here. This is an inherently personal bill to me because this is how I built my business. This is, when I look at my employees in the face, this is how they got their jobs. This is not something that picks out a few people. This is everybody's district. In the bill that we had a few weeks back, the bonding bill, I went through it. Not one single project was in Senate District 13. It doesn't bother me. But I'll tell you what, this bill right here is everything about Senate District 13 and the businesses in Kaiser. The businesses in St. Paul, the businesses in Newburgh, the businesses in Sherwood, the businesses in Gaston, the businesses in Wilsonville. That's everything this is about. And I'll conclude with this. Last session, I voted no on almost every general fund budget that came across this floor, and I sent a letter to the Secretary of the Senate explaining why. And I said, the budget you're passing is unsustainable. And I even said it would create a $1 billion hole in this biennium. Check with the Secretary of the Senate. It's there. We have been bad board of directors, and this bill makes us worse. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Diane Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I just have a very short statement to make. I voted for this bill in committee, and I will calmly and happily vote for it today on the floor. There's been obviously a great deal of passion on both sides of this bill, but to me the bill really stands for a simple proposition, and it's the same proposition that the former chair of House Revenue, the former Representative Lane Shetterly, spoke to when he carried a similar bill during the last recession, and that is that Oregonians elected each one of us to make the best choices about tax policy for every one of its citizens. I have a clear conscience and a clear heart today, believing that each one of you ran for office to stand up for the small business owner and the unemployed worker, to stand up for the young Oregonian, the senior citizen Oregonian, the rich and the poor. I have confidence that this legislature, as the founders of this state that we so proudly celebrate this week, elected us to do the right thing, to chart the right course through these uncertain economic seas that we are now facing that are unprecedented. I don't think this bill makes those choices or any of the ones that have been spoken to today. It just reserves the right, as every Oregonian wanted us to do before and after statehood, to exercise our choice not to mindlessly follow the federal government, but to do what is best for each of its citizens. And I would urge you to join me in voting aye on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think most of the points have been made, and the outcome is obviously predetermined. But for me, the sheer audacity of this bill is just remarkable. While Congress is racing to pass a stimulus package to address the economic freefall that our state and nation are in, to lend a helping hand, a hand up to the citizens of this great country, this legislature is racing to pass legislation that unilaterally prevents Oregonians from benefiting from that stimulus package, unilaterally slapping away that hand that would help our citizens. Mr. President, I think it's unconscionable. I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Senator Winsett. Are there any other senators that wish to speak to this bill, House Bill 2157? Okay, Senator Boquist, I'm going to recognize you for a second time. Please, go ahead.
Mr. President, declare a conflict of interest, a personal conflict. Thank you.
Would you please state for the record what your potential conflict of interest is?
My company will have a direct impact, and it's a personal company. Thank you.
Okay. Please note that for the record, Senator Boquist, potential conflict of interest. Recognize Senator Larry George, please.
I'd also like to declare a conflict of interest.
Would you please state for the record your potential conflict of interest?
I own several companies that would be directly impacted by the bill.
Your potential conflict of interest has been noted for the record. Are there any others that recognize Senator Telfer, please?
I have a conflict of interest in that I may reap some benefit from the additional tax preparation fees that we may recognize out of this.
Your potential conflict of interest is also noted. Recognize Senator Betsy Johnson, please. No, she does not. Recognize Senator Girard, please.
Potential conflict.
Would you please state your potential conflict?
I have several companies that will be detrimentally impacted by this bill.
Thank you. Your potential conflict of interest has been noted. Any other potential conflicts of interest we want to note at this time? Senator Burdick, do you wish to close? She does. Please proceed.
Yes, Mr. President, thank you. This has been a good debate today. I want to commend all my colleagues for having a reasoned and civil debate over an issue that I know is emotional for many of us. And actually, I agreed with points that were made on both sides of this debate today, specifically the point about how important it is, how crucial it is for us to support strong stimulus policies and strong policies to protect our business community, especially our small business community, as we head into the really, really rough seas that face us ahead. There have been a couple of undercurrents here in the discussion that I want to address. And the most worrisome to me is there seems to be an assumption or at least a communicated sentiment that this bill somehow will deny Oregon citizens differentially, will deny Oregon citizens the benefits that are going to accrue to all other citizens in the country from the federal stimulus. That is not true. Nothing in this bill reduces in any way the business incentives, the unemployment incentives, or any other tax break that occurs in the stimulus package. The federal tax rate is a good deal higher than ours. For corporations, for example, the highest tax rate is 35%, as opposed to 6.6% for the state. So when you talk about the bonus appreciation benefit, C corporations in Oregon will have the full benefit of the federal tax break at the 35% level. Whether they have a further benefit at the 6.6 corporate level that they pay in Oregon will be up to us. We may or may not decide to go along with that. Same with the other benefits. I wanted to particularly address something that my good colleague from Yamhill County raised, one of my colleagues from my other one from Yamhill County, Senator George, about the expensing provision in the federal stimulus package. He was the only one who mentioned it, and I just want to deal with it briefly because it's an example of some of the decisions that we're going to be making as we review the federal stimulus packages and decide for ourselves which of the provisions, if any, to pick up. The Internal Revenue Code Section 179 that was referred is a small business part of the code that allows small businesses to fully expense up to $125,000 in capital expenditures all in the same year. It's a tremendous business, it's a tremendous benefit for small business, as my colleague indicated. But it's a more targeted benefit than some of the other parts of the stimulus package. If we continue the expensing provision, it would be $3 million for the biennium, as opposed to $78 million for the larger bonus depreciation. That is an issue that we need to seriously consider when we get our ReConnect bill introduced in this body. We need to consider whether to take our smallest businesses and let them continue having a full deduction of all their expenses in 1 year if they're not over $125,000. It's a make or break for many small businesses. And as to the other parts of the code, you know, we've had discussion about how the revenue would be taken away from government programs, from schools, from senior services, from corrections and public safety. But we also have to keep in mind that there are programs out there, such as the one referred to by my good colleague from Beaverton, who's a member of the Senate Revenue Committee. There are also programs out there that we fund through tax credits, like the Business Energy Tax Credit, that have been very successful in bringing companies to Oregon, like Solar World, that is going to produce over 1,000 jobs. These programs need funding from us to make them work. These programs may be a better bet for us than some of the things that are in the federal stimulus package. But we won't know that until we really put them all together, until we have testimony from people, until we have the analysis from the Legislative Revenue Office on the federal stimulus package, which will be available to us in a couple of weeks. And then we can sit down as a board of directors and decide which of these proposed stimulus elements is going to give us the greatest benefit for our Oregon taxpayers who are counting on us to get them out of this mess we're in. We cannot afford to take cookie cutters from the federal government or anybody else. We need an Oregon solution to an Oregon economic crisis. I urge an aye vote, and I ask for a call of the Senate, Mr. President.
Senator Burke is demanding a call of the House. She's joined by Senator Devlin and Senator Rosenbaum. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant of arms will attend. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juanes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przanski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
Here.
All present.
All members are present that are subject to the call. The question now rises upon a third reading and the final passage of House Bill 2157. Those of you opposing the bill shall pass will answer aye as the names are called. And those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juanes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przanski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no. Atkinson. Boquist. Farioli. George. Gerard. Cruz. Metzger. Morse. Nelson. Starr. Telfer. Whitsett. Winters. 17 ayes.
House Bill 2157 have received a constitutional majority declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill, please. Recognize Senator Farioli, please. For what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, for the purpose of vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Thank you, Mr. President. I voted no because this is a $96 million tax increase. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Would the clerk please read the next bill?
Senate Joint Resolution 15, calling on President Abraham Lincoln as honorary tender to government on February 12, 2009.
Recognize Senator Farioli, please.
Point of personal privilege, Mr. President.
State your point, please.
A member of the chamber's integrity has been impugned.
What?
There was an outburst from one of the members indicating that a lie was told on the floor of the chamber.
What?
The words, if he wants, he repeated the words, the general, nothing interrupted.
Senator Farrell, you have put in a record that those words were spoken. They are part of the record. Do you wish to speak further to it?
I do, Mr. President. Mr. President, all of us are expected to comport our conduct with the principles of dignity and respect for each other. And if a member speaks his heart, he should be protected from a comment made by another member that either impugns his character or doubts his veracity. Mr. President, I think an apology is in order.
Senator Rob Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to apologize to Senator Farioli. What I should have said is he made an unfactual statement.
Let us proceed.
Mr. President?
Senator Farioli.
Mr. President, I think repeating the insult in a more ill-mannered manner is not an apology, Mr. President.
Let's go further. Senator Farioli has indicated it's on the record that the word lie was used. Senator Monroe has indicated that he did use the word. Is that correct? Senator Monroe, do you apologize? Do you apologize?
I just did apologize,
Senator Monroe, please. Do you apologize? Do you apologize according to how you apologize? Is that it?
I apologize the way I stated it,
well,
yes.
Senator Farioli, you continue to object. I'm going to end this discussion after a while. We do have a record on it. I think it's extremely unfortunate. This is extremely unfortunate for the Senate. So I want to ask that we go on to the next bill. You have noted that the statement, Senator Farioli, a record has been established. Clearly, Senator Monroe has indicated he used the word. He has also made his statement. Clearly, you don't accept that. I want to proceed on. If there's further actions to be taken, we will follow it up with either written statements or otherwise, Senator Farioli. I just want to say, my fellow senators, this is regrettable. It's an extraordinary debate. Could we now please go on to the next measure, which we've made a special debate, which I think is a very significant measure, please? Thank you. Would you please read the measure? Did you read it? Recognize now the carrier, Senator Ted Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I stand before you to invite all of our members to support Senate Joint Resolution 15. And, Mr. President, simply put, Senate Joint Resolution 15 declares President Abraham Lincoln the honorary territorial governor for today, February 12th, 2009. Mr. President, Oregonians have a unique and historic connection with Abraham Lincoln. That connection includes the fact that Lincoln was invited in 1849 by the incoming administration of President Zachary Taylor to be the governor of the Oregon Territory, which at that time included Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, was one of the largest land masses in the West. In fact, Mr. Lincoln declined to accept the territorial governorship of Oregon. At the time, it was said that Mrs. Lincoln didn't fancy moving her family to such a remote place. So Mr. Lincoln did decline the governorship of the state of, or the territory of Oregon, but undoubtedly, had he accepted that invitation, history would have been changed in amazing ways. While he never did govern the Oregon Territory, he had very close ties with the state. One of his former law partners, a close personal friend, Colonel Edward Dickinson Baker, was Oregon's first U.S. Senator. Sadly, Senator Baker was the only member of Congress killed during the Civil War, and in fact, the only member of Congress ever killed in battle. As the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln would be confronted with the issues that divided our country. He rallied most of the Northern Democrats to the Union cause. On January 1, 1863, he issued the Emancipation Proclamation that declared forever free those slaves held within the Confederacy. While he's primarily remembered for the Emancipation Declaration and his role in maintaining the Union and the Civil War, he did support several major pieces of legislation that had a direct impact on the state of Oregon and the Oregon Territory. The Morrill Land Grant Act was responsible for founding Oregon State University. So in a real way, you could say that perhaps Abraham Lincoln was the original beaver. He supported the Transcontinental Rail Act, which helped establish the coast-to-coast railroads that open up the West and the Oregon Territory, and the Homestead Act, which allocated land to settlers throughout the West, and particularly in Oregon. This joint resolution declares President Abraham Lincoln as the honorary territorial government for today, February 12, 2009, and we join with similar states and similar legislative bodies throughout the original Oregon Territory to so designate Abraham Lincoln as our territorial governor. Mr. President, I believe this act, this joint resolution, deserves a unanimous support of this body. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. The further discussion of the resolution is now before the Senate. Mr. Close, Senator Farioli. Which now rises upon the third reading, the final passage of SJR 15. Those opinion bills shall pass. Say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Boquist.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Farioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Girard.
Aye.
Hass. Hass. Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Juanes Anderson.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morris.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Brzezinski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
SJR 15, every seat of council majority is declared passed. Senator Burley, for what purpose do you rise? Senator Farioli, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to inform the body that we accept the sincere apology of our good colleague from the Senate, and thus closes the matter.
I want to speak to it. In dispute between members of which the party takes official notice, both parties to dispute should retire after being heard while the body decides what action, if any, will be taken concerning this matter. That's what the rules say. This is going to be a very tough session. I do not want us to end up being a disciplinary committee. If there are any further comments on the matter that is now before us, thank you, my fellow senators, for allowing me to make that statement. Without objection, I will set over the remaining bills till Monday's calendar. Third reading of Senate measures. Excuse me. No, I said I will set the bills over until Monday's calendar. I said that. I said the third reading. Oh, excuse me.
Mr. President, the Natural Resources Subcommittee will meet at 1:15. Thank you.
Recognize Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. The joint meeting between the Revenue Committee and the Transportation Committee will be held at 1:30.
Recognize Senator Farioli.
Mr. President, the Republican caucus that was scheduled for today is canceled. We feel that we've probably seen enough of each other for today.
Recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. As Democrats know, there's no caucus today. We do not plan a caucus for Saturday, but please be here on time, those that will be here for the ceremonial session.
We're going to come in on Monday at 10 o'clock. It's a new time because we're getting behind in our bills. We're going to come in on Monday at 10 o'clock. As you know, on Saturday we have a ceremonial session here to the extent you can be here, which starts at 10 o'clock. So Saturday, if you can be here, our ceremonial session to honor Oregon's great 150th birthday starts at 10 a.m. here on Saturday. We will now adjourn ourselves until 10 a.m. on Monday. There are no further objections. And with no further announcements, without objection, the Senate is going to adjourn until 10 a.m. on Monday, February 16th.